this morning when I told you that I absolutely had to vent on Ecto. I needed some serious emotional support because Ecto wasn't very nice to me. And then, just after lunch, everything kind of sorted itself out. So now I'm happy again, and I don't hold a grudge against Ecto anymore. I'm so bad at holding grudges. So the feelings are gone, but maybe I can tell you about what actually happened and how we sorted it out. Does that sound like a good compensation for a rant that went away?
Oh, for sure. That totally works. And then I can perhaps hold a grudge against Ecto. I don't know. We'll see.
Sounds good. I think this is going to be great. So when we did everything fast and loose, we didn't use 4 inkies. We just had fields with the strings with Derby IDs kind of generated by different CMSs. And then we looked them up and hoped that they existed. This was using Ecto and Postgres, and it looked quite a lot like RethinkDB, which, as far as I know, doesn't have 4 inkies. As a side note, I think 4 inkies is one of the killer features of a database. They are so good, and they save your butt so, like, all the time. And if you don't use them, you're in for a treat, so to speak. So that was the first version to be done with the first part of the migration fast. And surprisingly, everything has worked. It has worked so good. I know I've been talking about this with the glitter emoji around me.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. And now it's time to actually add those 4 inkies, because
I don't like where this is going. Like, I've had some notes from where I worked with a client, and like another technician came in and had all these reasonable notes about that there should perhaps be referential integrity in places.
Wow.
And I agree in principle.
But
at the time, I didn't know. I didn't actually know the domain model at all, and was figuring it out and also trying to move fairly quickly.
Yeah.
And in that case, I can tell you it has been, like, I've investigated what it would take to introduce foreign keys. And in that case, we have some kind of polymorphish relationships that makes it really, really hard.
Yeah. Yeah, that's where they fall apart badly.
So if we had them to begin with, we could absolutely have modeled it with them. It's just that I'm not sure we can feasibly get there from here.
No,
but
no,
I'm not also not convinced it's a major problem in this case.
Cool. Yeah. So we're going to add 4 inkeys because, well, let's say you have a vehicle. I'll just pick a domain. Any domain will work. So if you think this domain is boring, we can change the domain. But
Baking.
Okay, cool. So in baking, what do we... We have ingredients in baking. Each ingredient has one producer of this ingredient. So for instance, if you want to make cinnamon buns,
yep,
you'll need flour. And flour has like Axa. That's not, yep, a producer, that's a trademark. Lant Männen, I think, is the producer. Whatever, Axa is a cooler name. So let's go for that. And so in the table, you'll have the producer ID and the producer. And since I was tired and quite stupid yesterday when I started this rendezvous, I didn't really realize how the references macro worked, nor realize which columns I needed, or I didn't realize anything, to be totally honest. I mostly stared at code and looked more and more concerned. So where I landed after sleeping a good night's sleep was that the flower, I don't want to create a producer of the flower when I input the ingredient flower. I just want to choose from a list. So all the producers are already there.
Okay.
So also live view is involved and test fixtures. So I'm learning so much. This is amazing. And I'm missing my model forms from Django. But I can choose the producer from a list, which we can produce with a list producers call. Everything's fine. I produced that one. Produce is an amazing word. And then I get a producer ID, which is put into the right place in the select box in the live view. And then that ID goes all the way down to the change set. And I can cast the producer ID field, even though that feels incredibly unholy and wrong. And then I eventually, I wonder how, I wrote a custom function, of course, that took the producer ID field from the change set, looked up the correct producer from the database, and then put the producer in the producer field on the ingredient. And Bob's your uncle.
That does sound like you're doing extra work, though.
Cool. How should I do this?
I think you can just pass producer ID and put that as something you cast.
Oh.
If you already have the ID.
Yeah.
I think that's... So there's so much stuff with like references and Ecto.
Mm-hmm.
I remember this being a pain in the neck in Django as well. Like the Django ORM can absolutely fetch relationships for you. Super easy. When you want to build forms for adding them, things get very, very... Like form sets was death.
Yeah. Yeah, we've been swearing at form sets for a couple of years now, right?
Yeah. And I've heard people go, dealing with... Essentially, the form set thing, like related items and stuff, is super annoying in live view and all that. What I typically do is I don't treat that as like part of the same form usually. If you need to do that and need to build up the entire state and then save the entire state in one go, yes, then that gets annoying. But usually it's like, okay, if this thing has many children for some reason, then I will try to treat to kind of do the form bits separately. So I don't necessarily have to deal with a ton of different form states at the same time. I know there were some niceties released around last LexerConf, so that would be April last year or so, that should help make some of this easier and nicer. But yeah, there has been work on this. But yeah, it is a continuously annoying thing. But on the Ecto side, you can do a bunch of like put association, put the sock, or da 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 da. I never really liked thinking in those terms, or I've never really absorbed that part of the API very well. And I think it's mostly about, like, I'm super comfortable just referencing the ID. And the ID, on an ingredient, you would have the producer ID as a yep. field because yep. you've set up a producer kind of meta field, a producer association.
Yep.
So there is a producer field under the hood, and you can absolutely treat that as a normal field, which is quite straightforward.
And it's very nice. I think I'll need to write something about this, just at least for my sake. Maybe it'll become a blog post, because there's something here I don't know why it took me so long time to realize all of this. Also, one of the things that made me swear a lot is that the producer field or producer ID can't be nil because everything has a producer.
Well, that sounds like a decision you made.
Yes, it comes back to that.
That sounds like a personal choice.
Well, it's about database modeling, you know.
Oh, yeah,
and also I prefer to have things be. I think maybe Django did a number on me many years ago when it went, well, you don't really want nil. Just start out by putting things in all the fields, and then if you need them to be nil, you'll have to tell me so.
Yeah. So was this about handling the immediate errors that show up the moment you kind of try to validate part of your form, or?
No, that actually works because it chooses something in that dropdown by default.
Okay.
So that's cool. But it was also a lot like one thing that never helps, but also helps a bit. I'm realizing I'm very clear right now. So I'm lazy and I'm in a hurry. So I generate loads of code. And then I look at the page, look at the tests, and like, yeah, it looks fine, let's go, without really understanding anything about the generated code. So when some of these finer points show up, like, okay, I need to fetch another batch of data and like connect that to this data and stuff, everything becomes incredibly hard suddenly. So it's a very bumpy learning curve.
Kind of the top-down approach.
Yeah, and I'm...
dive in, grab a vertical slice, implement through all the layers, swear whenever it diverts into things you didn't intend to learn.
Exactly. So, that doesn't help, really. And I don't know how it would work in any other way. So, yeah, I'm at a loss there. Also, another thing that doesn't help at all is that when I Googled on these problems, I know that the cool kids today don't Google because Google, they ask ChatGPT and so on. But I'm not a cool kid. I'm an old curmudgeon. So I Googled. As we have established. I don't think it's on my LinkedIn yet. I should add it. Anyway, so I Googled, and the range of blog articles, forum posts, Stack Overflow answers, and so on, are from 2015 to now. And the older they are, the increasingly less useful they are, because, boy, have things happened in Phoenix Land. So much cool stuff has happened. So it's when I looked at some of the 2015 things just out of curiosity, it was like, I don't recognize this code. Yes, it's Elixir, but yeah, cool. Old Phoenix is old. But I had the same problem with Django 10 years ago, 15, when Django was young, in 2008, I think. So... oh, God, I'm old. Yes. So, yeah. Otherwise, I'm quite fond of Ecto. It's the part of Phoenix I like the best, I think.
So Phoenix is, yeah. Well, Ecto, I guess, is part of Phoenix in terms of the default generated project. So, but there's actually nothing heavily tying them together, aside from the Phoenix Ecto module, I believe.
Oh, it's
which
like,
is a separate dependency.
Huh.
There's one of those.
So it works a bit like Cowboy Unplug.
Yeah. So that's the interesting part. I think there's a Plug Cowboy, Plug Bandit, for depending on which server you want. And then I think there's a Plug Phoenix or a Phoenix Plug.
Yeah.
And then there's a Phoenix Ecto. and an ecto. So glue.
Yeah, this is incredibly modular.
I might be wrong on one of those or two, but that pattern shows up sometimes.
Yeah.
I really like ecto in terms of it lets you do all the things and it tries really hard to make you not do the bad things. I don't always love that it's a DSL. I would like if it was more function call oriented. But the reason it is a DSL is so that they can compile and check your statements at compile time. And like everything you run in ecto is a prepared statement.
Cool. Well, you haven't won me over to the I don't likes parts of ecto yet.
No.
So bring it on.
Yeah. So that's good stuff. It's like, oh, we prevent SQL injection at compile time.
Om nom nom, so good.
Yeah,
yes, that's good. Want more of it.
But the API can be a little bit weird and clunky. Like there are two or three different ways of constructing queries.
Yeah.
And I can't keep them all straight. And some of them are a little bit too easy to make mistakes with. I think that you should learn the one where it's like, oh, you add things to a list where it's like...
The keyword list one?
No, well, so if you import ecto query, you can do from, and then you pipe that to a where, and then you pipe that to a order. That one.
Yep.
But that, if you're going to make any non-trivial things with that one, you also need to do kind of a binding thing where there's this list where you put variables to bind, which are references to tables, essentially.
Yeah.
And that stuff is just like, yeah, it doesn't sit as perfect with me, but it's a pragmatic thing and it works well. Like a client I recently worked with, they definitely got good mileage out of just the fact that ecto does also let you step outside of the safeties when you need to, like fragments. So in their case, they needed to do a bunch of bulk upserts, essentially, to a bunch of numbered fields. So it was like accounting updates, essentially.
Yep.
So sometimes they needed to add values, sometimes they needed to change them. If they needed to change them, it was to increment them by an amount per row. And they want to do this in bulk. And you can't quite do that the normal way with like update all or insert all on conflict handling will not take you all the way to what they were needing to do.
Okay.
But the way on conflict works is a Postgres thing. And using fragments, you can actually kind of get into what Postgres is doing, and you can tell it, oh, yeah, if you're dealing with a conflict, meaning we are updating rather than inserting, then Postgres will actually have the original record available for you.
Yep.
So that you can write what it should do on that collision. So in this case, instead of taking the amount and pushing it into a new row, you take the value and you add it to the previous value. Done. And like it wasn't obvious, it wasn't the most straightforward thing, but it was available and they didn't have to leave and just write raw SQL.
That's very nice.
Yeah, so like the abstractions really do hold. It's just that like SQL is super complicated, so ecto has to be more complicated than I wish it was.
So is it so maybe that you have a beef with SQL rather than ecto?
So I don't mind SQL because I use a small subset of SQL, but ecto has to support more SQL than I use. And also there, it's just stuff about like handling relationships and doing preloads and avoiding N plus one queries and stuff that's like annoying. But the other option is to try to make it super simple, which the Django ORM does. And that's N plus one query city.
Yeah, yeah.
That's like everyone knows at this point, or a lot of people have had to learn that this is a bad way to do things. Like, oh, I'll do a for loop and then I'll fetch all these related items and yada yada.
Mm. To keep my Haskell hat, I need to talk about, I think the name is Haxel. I'm not sure. Me and names is as usual.
I bet his name is Axel and he works on Haskell, so he calls himself Haxel.
Yeah, I suppose so. It's a library or DSL to construct SQL queries that are run in parallel. Not only SQL queries, you can fetch almost anything you want and combine them and do something with it. It was created at Facebook many years ago, and I think they're still using it for their anti-abuse stuff everywhere. That's kind of cool. It's also a DSL. I think a lot of the one thing they do is they make it possible to write really stupid code that doesn't give you N plus one queries. So they can analyze the loops or whatever you use and
fix them.
Yeah, because if you look at it from like 10,000 feet, why shouldn't you be allowed to write loops and put a query in it? Because you want to do something with it. So you if the language is smart enough, it could take the query out from the loop and go, okay, so for what numbers or other parameter that you're looping over can we put into the database in bulk and ask for and then loop over the result? That should be a transformation that's okay in many cases. In some cases, it's probably impossible to do it, but then you can always crash.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think also we're using the ECTO syntax that looks most like SQL. It's like SQL with commas and colons plus some Elixir.
So you're like throwing a where clause inside of the from.
Yep.
Yeah, and that works until you need certain types of comparisons and stuff. Then I think you need to bail to the other one, or you might be able to structure them in that as well. But yeah, I usually start with that one, and then if I need to, I bail to the other one.
Interesting. It hasn't crashed on us so far, so I'll let you know when the power of the SQL syntax falls over, or the power of lists, I suppose, keyword lists. Another thing that makes me like ECTO more, I'm the ECTO steel man, you know?
Okay.
So, yeah. And I also like
sucking ECTO up to the
ECTO limbs. Yeah, of course.
To be very clear, I like Jose quite well. He just threw a client my way.
Oh, lovely. Yeah. Also, people aren't equal to what they're producing. Just let put it out there.
Actually, something quite interesting to do is to follow the ECTO mailing list, which I started doing at some point.
Huh. I need to do that too, I think.
That's where feature discussion happens, and it's just another place where Jose is very active.
I don't think he's one person.
He has a brother that's kind of similar, but I don't think he could pretend to be Jose in a technical conversation.
Oh well. Anyway, another thing that makes me like ECTO and the syntax more is that before we went on this great trip to re-implement our external API in Phoenix, I went on another great trip. It's strange how much of my job is just walking around in a desert or something like that. It's just trip after trip in weird places.
Just tripping.
So, just tripping balls. We have this Rethink DB database. Probably great in a way. The people who made this project a long time ago, like everything I'm working on, not Rethink DB, they kind of blew through the roof on the invention budget. They picked all the cool things. Some of them were good, some of them were less good, of course, because it's hard to only pick the good things. But with that said, we needed to change Rethink DB to something that performed better and to something that we understood. So we picked Postgres because nobody has been fired for picking Postgres, right?
Why didn't you go with Oracle?
Yeah, I was... because they didn't take me out to dinner.
Fair.
Yeah.
And the Postgres company did.
Of course. The Postgres company. It sounds like something that builds trains or railway in the 1800s in the Wild West. With that said, we picked Postgres. So to migrate from RethinkDB to Postgres, the most conservative and safe approach, which I was kind of tired and scared at the moment. So I picked that, which was to create a kind of query layer. So to rip all the queries out from the code all over the place, put them in one module, call them Rethink Queries or something, create another module, which is the layer above that, that calls the queries and does all the massaging, and then another module above that that does more stuff. This was a while ago. And then add the twin to the Rethink stack, which is the Postgres stack, and at the top of this have when select queries or the Rethink version of them are called, the Postgres and the Rethink data, what they return from the databases is compared, and if it differs, it screams loudly in my inbox. Yeah. And then I can fix the Postgres queries. And we had this running for a couple of months, maybe half a year, and then we switched. An important part of that work, and kind of the gist of this rambling story, is that I wrote so much SQL manually. And after doing that, the Ecto DSL, it just rocks. It's composable.
Yeah, that's the big thing with yeah. any of this. I think that's the biggest reason to ever use an ORM. Like, I remember feeling good when I could ditch SQL Alchemy after doing too much hard work with trying to make that build the right query and then have Postgres be happy with a particular query that was very hairy.
Yeah.
That was annoying to do in SQL Alchemy, but it would have been almost impossible to do well without it. And then I bailed, wrote some scripts in just plain SQL for some other piece of work. That was very nice because it was very static, scripty stuff. Like, I just need to fetch all of these according to criteria, like, and not dealing with models, no schemas, just like, SQL.
Yeah.
That's nice sometimes.
Yeah.
But the moment you need to go, well, it might have an order by clause, and it might have one or 10 where clauses, and
yeah,
this should really only apply if this applies, and yada, then you start stitching strings together, and then you're doing the job of an ORM in a very dangerous way.
Yeah, you did that too, stitching strings together?
It's unavoidable if you're trying to build SQL queries that are super flexible.
Yeah, or maybe you build a DSL and a very small compiler.
Which is what Ecto is.
Yeah.
Well, the compiler isn't super small, but the Ecto compiler is small.
Yeah.
Kind of. I mean, it's expanding the macros, I guess. Something I didn't know, which I picked up from that mailing list, by the way, I think Ecto queries are stored in ETS. ATS tables.
Yeah.
Which would kind of make sense. It's like it's a read mostly resource, and you don't want to regenerate them constantly and stuff. Yeah, I don't know how it's being used there, but ETS, man, it shows up in the weirdest places.
Yeah, it's ETS and gen servers just pop up everywhere.
Like gen servers is always like, oh yeah, this is the first attempt. The second attempt always includes ETS because it is more efficient, strictly speaking, than gen servers. And if you need any of that efficiency, then like the optimization work I've been doing with a client to spare their poor Postgres instance and to ensure that they can scale towards the horizon, that they gave me some numbers of their targets for the year just now. They think they can hit them mostly with the optimizations we've done, so that's promising. But there's going to be a lot of queries.
Nice.
But a lot of that work has just been like, okay, batch the updates against the database as much as possible to minimize the number of individual queries that need to kind of contest a table and continuously. Oh, one problem was just there were so many transactions opening and closing. So the batching has done wonders for that. It's just one of those dream graphs that went from, like, throughput is the same. Number of operations per second went way down. And average query time went way down. It's like all of the metrics are better now.
Lovely.
Aside from the one that needs to stay the same. Yeah. Which is, are we doing all the work? But yeah, a lot of just random offloading there is being done to ETS as well. So there are a few other trouble tables that they're shifting more and more to ETS. Or right now it's not even a table, it's just a gen server. But sometimes that gen server has like 30,000 other gen servers trying to talk to it.
Oh, it's a popular one.
Yeah, yeah. So if they talk to ETS instead, read concurrent ETS.
Yeah,
write should concurrent work better. ETS maybe. Yeah, that would help.
Yeah, write concurrent ETS. I haven't been brave enough to try it yet.
Supposedly, the trade-off to read and write concurrent ETS is just memory usage. Oh. So you can use both, read concurrent and write, or read optimized, write optimized, whatever it is called. So you can optimize it for both. I think there are potential downsides. I think there are trade-offs in there besides memory usage, but I don't know them. I assume it's building up some kind of write-ahead log style thing when it's being write concurrent, but I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I'd need to look into it at some point. I'm curious how it's doing it.
Because I was going to say the obvious, it's of course not obvious. A pattern I like is to have a gen server that has an ETS table and all the writing operations goes through the gen server. So you get that lovely serialized queue of stuff.
Yeah, if you need that, for sure.
I usually think I do. Maybe I don't.
So you could check what the guarantees of ETS are to begin with. It's like if you need to connect more logic to like essentially a transaction against ETS, then of course a gen server is very helpful to serialize that. But I know you can make, for example, if you're dealing with counters,
mm-hmm.
ETS has a native thing where you can just deal with incrementing and decrementing numbers. You can do that atomically.
Lovely. So good. Yeah. It might mostly be that I've been bitten so hard repeatedly by cowboys, or I mean people who went, okay, we need to have amnesia go really, really fast. So let's build our whole API on the dirty read and dirty write and the other dirty prefix functions.
Screw your guarantees. We don't need constraints.
Exactly. Which it's
beta schmeta.
Yeah, and it held lots of state that was quite important for stuff. So if I hadn't worked at the place, I probably would have leaned back with a big bucket of popcorn and laughed. But now I had to take care of all these ghostly apparitions that just went, oh, so this baker are doing one order, and the other baker is doing the same order. There'll be so many cinnamon buns. And if the result actually was twice as much cinnamon buns that I could eat, I would have been quite happy about it, but it wasn't. So now I'm sad and a bit frightened. And I really like my transactional guarantees.
Well, to each their own, I guess.